Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to Today We Learned.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Razzle.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well as well.
That sounds great.
Yeah, thank you. It is great. It's great to be well. And being well is pretty swell. You know what else is swell? This podcast, and specifically today's episode. I think you guys are going to like it. A lot of stories, a lot of tangents, no cosines. This is not a math podcast.
No, but there is some math mentioned in one of the facts, I think.
There's math, mathematicians, and magicians, but no math-based magicians.
Yeah. No, it's you know, there's none of those magic tricks where it's you look at the TV and you point at a thing and it's all based on numbers and easy.
Yeah.
It's none of that.
There's none of that Harry Potter stuff.
This is a you know, it's a great it's a great show.
It's a really great show.
It's a really great show. It's a you know, it's a punk rock show, dude. This guy, he's been around. He's got a career spanning decades of various various mediums, from spoken word
to stand up,
owning a record label,
to performing in front of a crowd of so many people, like at the Warped Tour. That's incredible.
Absolutely. I mean, from doing, you know, magic and just everything. This guy, he's been around. He's got a lot of great stories that are additions to the facts we bring up. So you guys are going to enjoy it. We've enjoyed it. He's a really nice guy, really cool dude. He's got a lot of cool stuff in the works coming up. And I guess do you have anything else to say? Shall we get right into it?
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it
like Chilean miners in a Chilean mine.
Let's just do it, as one of our facts
Reebok. Wait,
let's Reebok.
Anyway.
Converse? No, Nike.
Yeah.
Converse.
Converse.
Let's
You might be in an improv troupe if you're wearing us.
Yes. Yeah, right. Or a punk band.
Yeah.
Right? Or on a CW show that wants to be hit like The Flash.
Hey,
I love The Flash.
That show is great.
I love The Flash.
I've had a lot of people
love
Arrow.
So much, dude.
Hating on The Flash, are wrong.
Let me tell you something.
There's room in your heart
for
both.
Here's the deal. I love Arrow, but not as much as The Flash anymore. Arrow's kind of losing it to me. Arrow's kind of jumping the shark for me.
Yeah.
But The Flash is so good, dude.
Because it's got that superhero action, but it's got heart as well.
Absolutely. I love
It's a little less soapy than Arrow. And maybe, you know, his abs are a little smaller, but I mean, you know what?
That's
what
one
can
of my
do?
Gripes. Is like, come on, dude. You're The Flash. At least do some push-ups, dude.
Yeah, no, he was running all the time. He's going to be lean. He's got that cardio. Yeah, he's not lifting.
But he should still have
he's
he
not
be
lifting.
Cut like a runner. then look sickly like a runner.
Yeah. I mean, starring Usain Bolt.
Let's get in this podcast. It's a great podcast. A lot of cool fun facts, a lot of cool stories. So let's get into it. Today
We learn number 73. 73.
Aristotle.
Whoa.
What are we on? 74?
Oh, my bad. I told you guys this was not a podcast of math.
I told you. You were right, Dan. I apologize.
Was I right?
You were right.
Oh.
I was wrong.
Well, I apologize. Whoa. I apologize. One pod more.
One pod. Today we learn
number 73. What? Wait. Three? It is three?
That's three.
So I was wrong.
Twice.
You told me I was right.
You were wrong twice.
Man.
You were right about not being in math class.
Oh, see, that was unclear.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Dan was wrong twice now.
Number 70. Okay. Shall we?
It starts with a three.
Mm-hmm. Threvendy. Today we learn number 73 with Joe's. Oh, my God.
Who were you going to say?
I was going to say, I don't know.
Who were you going to say?
I just wanted to say Mike. With Mike. No last
Who
name.
Who
were
you going to say? Mike.
Mike is the guest for 74. Just my pal, Mike.
Holy moly, this is amazing.
Off the rails like a train that Denzel Washington cannot stop.
Here's the deal. I'm curious, if you've listened to all of this so far, tweet at us and let us know, because this is amazing.
Yeah.
Today we learn
number 73 with Joe Sib. Speaking of Sib, we had some sibilant sounds there. Anyway, listen to the show.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Yeah. Like, like, it was so, like, getting that email from him was, like, such a huge thing.
He's such a nice dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's exactly that. Yeah. Like, he's so matter-of-fact and just so intense and so real.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, he was here and we recorded, and even after we got recorded, you know, because we try to keep our episodes around, like, 45 to an hour. Generally,
I'm sure he hung out afterwards.
He hung out after and continued to talk, and it's just like, I wish we,
and,
like,
he gets the jokes.
Yeah.
Like, he, you're like, oh, is he going to be so, like, like, I
went. He doesn't laugh at them, but he gets the
And it, and you know what was even better, too, is I asked him, when he sent me that email, you know, we'd stay in touch with each other, and, you know, I emailed him here and there, and then at one point, I was inviting him to come and see me perform. I was like, hey, I'd really, you know, how awesome would that be? You should come and see the show. And he, sent me an email, and the email, that email was even great because it said, I'm over in Afghanistan, or like some just like some radical crazy land that you're not even supposed to be in. Somehow he's found his way in there and he cannot make the show. And then at the email, I had also said, hey, you know, hit me your address and I'll send you a package of bands on side one. I'd love to send you some music. And he said, no need for the package of music. I feel that I would not enjoy, like, I would not like it.
Yeah.
Like, just totally straight up, like, dude, I dig you. Not a fan of your label or your bands. Yeah. And I was like, that's rad. Like, but I do think he wanted Gogo Bordello. He was like, I'll take Gogo Bordello. And they were on his show.
Who doesn't like Gogo Bordello, though?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So there we go. That's the portion of the Henry Rollins interview.
I like it. That's here's the deal. We're
Are we starting? Are we going?
We're always rolling.
Oh, I love it.
So that's a great intro. I love that story. That's a great thing. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Today We Learn. My name
welcome
is Razzle.
Welcome back. I'm Dan.
And that voice you hear, that voice after telling you that wonderful story, he's the co-creator of the punk rock record label Side One Dummy. He's a very funny stand-up comedian and former singer of the band Wax.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Sib.
Thank you.
Welcome, Joe Sib.
We're here.
We're here. Here's something that, like, because we've known each other for, you know, maybe 6 months, maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
I was
via Twitter.
I met you
comedy.
At Side One Dummy.
Yeah, and I was doing a little bit of reading up on you, and I've known, you know, Side One Dummy and known about them for a while. I used to be in a punk band in Michigan, and I sent you guys some demos like 15 years ago and all that. Long story.
Did we answer them?
I don't think so, but
damn.
It was, you know, it is what it is. You know,
you must have sent it to Side Two.
Yeah. and I didn't even – it blew my mind when I read this. Wax – you're the running dude on fire, Cal, was
Spike
was
Jones video.
Yeah,
that's us.
And I'm reading and I'm like, holy shit, like, because that video is so iconic from like the 90s and everything, and just punk rock and slow motion dude running the streets on fire. Everybody's have seen
shot
this video.
Shot right across the street.
Really?
Shot right across the street. He runs down Gardner.
Okay.
We're on Sunset across from Toy, so we're on Gardner and Sunset right now.
Yeah.
And he literally runs down Gardner and makes a right to where Toy is, like going into Toy, and the bus and everything, and all of us we're all sitting on Gardner, and the video is way more iconic and popular than the band Wax ever was. Which is a trip, and it's also cool because people always, like, I think for as long as I'm walking around on this earth and I'm vertical, people always bring up that video.
That's a great video, dude.
I'm so honored to be a part of it because it's one of those things, like, it came together so. I told the story the other night about how that whole video came together, and it was so not the way it, you know, in the day and age of videos and, hey, you know, the record company's giving you this amount of money. First of all, no one gives that kind of money to make a video like that anymore.
Yeah.
No one hires that. You know, you don't have a budget like that. And when Spike did the video for us, there was no – he had an idea, but it wasn't written down.
Yeah.
So I was the middleman between Interscope Records, which was like at that time like, you know, Jimmy Iving and who's gone on to do Beats and everything else. You know, he produced U2. I mean, he's a legendary producer. He's worked with Springsteen. I mean, he was this guy. So for me to work with Jimmy Iving was amazing, but I was the middleman between him and Spike, and they kept saying, "Hey man, like, this guy's asking for a pretty big check. What is the concept of the video?"
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, because at this point...
A dude on fire?
Yeah. Well, we didn't even know it was going to be a dude on fire.
We need something in writing.
Yeah. They were like, Joe, we need to see a concept. We just can't... Spike's company's asking for these checks. And there was never an official concept written down. And I remember I just kept saying, no, it'll be cool. And at that point, Spike had so much clout with him. He had done the Buddy Holly video. Yeah. He'd also done the Cannonball video for the Breeders. And, you know, he was on fire, literally. Yeah. And so when he said to me, he said, I got an idea. He had just done a fire hose video, and he basically said, I want to do something with fire. And when I did the fire hose videos with Mike Watt, we slowed it down and it looks really cool. So when we showed up on that Saturday morning, that was really all that he had told us. And then we showed up, there was a stunt man there. He had a whole idea, and he went, oh, okay. And I mean, that was the beauty of his, him being who he is. And it all turned out pretty amazing. But the label was so bummed at us because when we turned it in, because it's a one-shot video.
Yeah.
For everyone that's seen it, you know what I'm talking about. For the people that haven't, it's one long 3-minute shot, but it's really 24 seconds slowed down to 2.5 minutes, whatever the length of the song is. So the label assumed that there'd be shots of the band playing in between, like, you know, and Spike was like, no, it's going to just be one shot. And then we were like, okay, whatever you say, Spike. But then you have this record company saying, well, where's the band? They're not there.
We got to show, and, you know, we gotta show and, the product.
Yeah. And
we're trying to sell a product here.
We were young dudes at that point. We had a cool look to us, you know, and they were like, you need to be in the video. And we went for like, no, whatever Spike says goes. And I remember one of the guys at the meeting, not Jimmy Iovine, but one of the...
And now you're on our podcast. We're sorry. Yeah.
No, basically what he said to us was, I'm not in the business of making short films for Spike Jonze. And we just held to as a band. We're like, nah, Spike says we're not in it. We're not in it. You know, we're in it. He runs by us on fire.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, the video went on. It's, you know, it's always on these like photography and movie. You know, it's cool.
I mean, it's a well done video. Yeah. Like, as far as filmmaking goes, it's a great song. And it's a great video.
You know, that
like
almost makes it more memorable. Every freaking video has shots of the band playing.
Yeah.
You know, change it up.
And that was that, you know, I wish I could take credit for that because all I said was, whatever Spike says, we'll do.
I think saying yes was a big part of that.
It was literally right out. Whenever I come over to Meltdown, I'm like, wow, we did that video right here.
That's awesome.
And then we got really, really drunk at El Compadre.
Oh, love that place.
Yeah.
Great margaritas.
I got so drunk I took a leak on the bar.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
That place, I'll tell you what, they got some good food there.
Right now, everyone listens.
Yeah, those chips.
Like, I hate this guy.
Everyone's like, who is this guy? Location humor, we don't locate. We're in Cincinnati, and we don't know where they're going.
Yeah, pretend we said something about Skyline Chili.
Hey, guys, Google Earth. Google Earth.
Take a tour.
There you go.
Joe.
Yes.
As you know, you've listened to a couple of the episodes, and as we've told you, we like to start off each episode with the guest providing a fun fact about themselves or something they learned recently. No rules, no holds barred. Okay.
Do you want a fact or something that I've learned? Because I
either
I,
or
dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice.
Wow.
No rules.
I would say. Because everyone, I always feel that I get always compared. Like no matter what, Sidewind Dummy is always like the punk rock label, which. We definitely started out as a punk label, but I feel like we've turned into more way wider and eclectic than that. You know, we have so many different bands on there. Because punk rock to me is like, because I'm an old dude, is like the Clash and the Ramones. So I always get associated with punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think the furthest thing away from punk rock, because I feel like I love it and I'm grateful because I've had a lot of great experiences with it. And we could talk about the Ramones and we could talk about my night with Joe Strummer and touring with Social Distortion or going out with the Ramones or all of those experiences, seeing Minor Threat for the first time. Like I have great stories of that. But I think a weird fact that maybe no one knows is that I was a child magician.
Really?
Oh, really?
Fully into magic all the way, I would say, magic. Houdini is my first rock star.
Okay.
What was your do you have like a specialty, like card tricks or like close-up magic, or you just like the
I
whole
would
thing?
Say I loved the whole thing. It was a really, like I said, I saw Tony Curtis in the movie Houdini, and it was this old flick, and I remember I watched it with my dad, and when it ended, I couldn't believe that there was actually a guy named Houdini, and then I started as a kid getting books about Houdini and reading about him and finding out about all the other magicians and all the other magicians that were associated with him and finding out about the, you know, the castle down here, the magic castle in Hollywood, and how you could only get in there if you were a magician, and the whole, like, I was so fascinated with like the backstory of these magicians. And Houdini's story to me was no different than as a kid growing up and reading about the Ramones. What do you mean they're yeah. four brothers or you know, GBH from England, like their first time in America, like, wow, this is scary. And but like before all of that, to me, magic was totally like I couldn't stop thinking about it and stop reading about it. Like I had to find everything on it, and I had all these little books, and the thing that was fun to do at that time was my dad, he was totally cool about learning these tricks with me, and we would learn a trick a week. That was our whole thing. Like we'd go at the back then go to the library,
yeah,
and we'd pick out a book because they'd have different books with tricks. And at first it started out like, you know, really little, mm-hmm. you know, like, okay, let's do the cotton balls on the box. You know, balls, you get the magic kit and you're like, okay, this sucks, you know, the rope, the wand. But then all of a sudden, as I got more and more into it, we started learning bigger tricks, and by the end I like had a whole thing where I escaped from handcuffs.
Oh wow.
And I had a cape. and I actually—
Did you have a magician name?
The Great Sibiondo.
Nice.
Because that's my last name, Sibiondo, not Sib. It was the Great Sibiondo. And I was, my dad, like, we built tricks together. And I that's went awesome. Around, and it was so crazy because I would actually perform at our school. And I remember as a kid, I was doing all these little shows. You know, like, I'd do a show for some friends or do a show. It was a lot of family stuff back then. But I remember I set up a talent show, and, like, the kids in the neighborhood, everyone performed, and I did magic. And that was like my first taste of like, whoa, dude, there's like people here. And in my head, it felt like there was thousands, but there's probably like 30 people.
Yeah.
And then we used to go to this pizza parlor in Santa Cruz where I grew up called Arts Pizza. And I was eating pizza one night there, and it's like Friday night, and like you have your grape soda and you're like, you know, pepperoni. And like, I'm like, whoa, that's cool. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I say to my dad, I go, Dad, I go, this would be an awesome place for a magic show, which, you know, no one else in the room is thinking that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I look back on that, and like my dad, it was so cool because he was so rad. He was like, he's like, yeah, I think it is. And I remember, I'll never forget this. He goes, well, you know, you got to do. And I'm like, what? He goes, you got to talk to Art. That was the owner. You got to talk to Art about doing a magic show here. And I was like, really? Like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, he owns it. You got to go back there and talk to him. I'm like, well, can't you? And he's like, I'm not doing the magic show. Yeah. You are. You know? And I remember, I'm like, okay. And I remember I walked back there. There's this big, huge Italian dude. He's like, you know, it's a Friday night and everyone's, you know, doing what we're doing. They're with their families, eating pizza, drinking Fanta, grape soda, playing a shuffleboard, listening to Elton John on the jukebox. Like, it's the Sebs, you know? And I walk over there and I go, hey, you know, Art? And he's like, he looked at me, yeah. And I go, my name's Joseph Sibiondo, and I live here in Santa Cruz, and I'm a magician, and I'd love to perform a magic show here. And I remember he kind of just looked at me like, you know, like, are you fucking with me? Yeah. But I didn't realize it. My dad was standing behind me. That was like the one thing. Like he like to vouch, like, yeah. Dude, I know this is weird. The guy wants to do a magic show here. Yeah. And then my dad taught me the golden trick. He'll get people here. That's what he did. And the guy was like, really? He goes, yep, he'll fill it up. Because, you know, my dad was like, we'll get people to come order pizza, you know, and sure enough,
it's
I remember
a bringer show.
Yeah, it was so
the original bringer.
And I remember it was so weird. It was like 2 weeks later, I was there with my box and my cape on. And I remember this is the gear I used to wear on stage. This is what I thought being a magician in 1979 was. Close Encounters shirt. Remember the movie Close Encounters the Third?
I had, so good.
And remember how they used to make those t-shirts with the print on top? Yeah,
I'm trying to
it was
six notes,
yeah, and it was the movie about the UFO coming, and then
so
the whole movie's about
Richard Dreyfuss.
There you go.
But anyway,
Spielberg, right?
Yes, yeah, Spielberg's his first movie, I think, before Jaws, maybe, or after one of his.
I think it was after Jaws.
After then, it may have been after Jaws, then E.T.
But the thing that was crazy was, I went. Yeah. We had people there, and I had assistants. Like I remember the girls' names: Brandy Perry, Vicky Leach. They were my assistants, and like they really didn't assist me.
Are names of assistants.
Yeah,
of, like,
and I was like, "What's up? Check it out." They really didn't do much, but I had them dress up in gear, and then we had all these people come down. And I just remember it's a Friday night, everyone's eating pizza in Santa Cruz, and for people that know Santa Cruz, it's a beach town, and it's very, you know, it's like it's just. You know, it's not city at all. So all, you know, people are there, they're drinking. And then all of a sudden, I'll never forget, like Art just comes out and he's like, unplugs the jukebox. So whatever that jam was on ends. And he's like, all right, everybody, we have a guest tonight. And everyone kind of looks up like, what's this guy talking about? And he goes, I'm going to hand it over to your magician for the night, the great Subiondo. And then I'm like, hey, everyone, what's the, like, you know, and everyone just, I just remember people going, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, yeah, what's this guy going to do? And I remember I did my whole show and did it. And I remember we got paid in pizza and, you know, drinks and stuff. Yeah. And my dad was stoked. He was like, this is awesome.
Living the dream.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the guy, and then I remember Art was like, when can you come back? And my dad's like, he'll be back in 2 weeks. Like, you know, like
that's great.
Yeah. So that was my first time on stage.
As a kid, especially in front of, like, regardless of if it's 30 people, it seems like so many. Like, I was in grade school. I would have been in fourth or fifth grade. We did a it was a combination of things. It was a school and the gymnasium. There maybe was – maybe in my brain, I'm thinking of all of the grades. You know, there's maybe 30 kids in each grade and their parents and grandparents. So I'm thinking in my brain, I'm thinking there was maybe like 250, 300 people there, maybe as far as parents and grandparents go. Maybe 150, depending to whatever. There's five grades, 30 people, that's 150 kids. Times that by two, 300 people as far as parents go, maybe. Anyways.
Dude, you just did so much math. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, all right, there's some people there. It's all full. Right,
solve for X.
It very well could have been 50. I don't know. But in my brain, as a fourth or fifth grader, it seemed like there was a ton of people there. And I remember it was for a Christmas production. We did a production of – it was like a stage reading / play featuring – for some reason, there were dinosaurs involved, but it also had to do with the that train, the Christmas train, they made that Tom Hanks movie about.
Polar Express.
It had to deal with that because I remember distinctively drawing. I was an artist back then too. I drew like the cover for a pamphlet of it, and I had like the smoke spelling it out and all that. Regardless, they're going through and they're like the teacher who was organizing it all, she had me she was like picking people to do the parts, and I didn't get a part.
Ah.
And she takes me outside and she's like, no, all the grades have a part. And she's like, no, I don't want you to feel left out. I know you don't have, you didn't get a part or anything. But I feel like we want to do Heal the World, a sing along that Michael Jackson song. And she's like, I feel like you would be really great at doing the Michael Jackson part.
Oh my goodness.
And lip syncing it and all that and singing along. And I'm like, sure. So I closed the show as Michael Jackson. I had my mom make me a
glitter glove.
A glitter, like a white. It was at the white time. It was like the white arm brace thing. I had a black silk shirt. I had like a white thing. I had my black pants. I had dress shoes that I put duct tape on the bottom of so I could do the moonwalk. And ever since then, I've learned how to do the moonwalk for that and I could do it. And I remember just like bringing the house down. And if I was like, if I knew what sex was in fourth grade, I could have banged so many fourth graders because it was like the, like your magic show is, I don't remember how many actual people were there, but closing a show and having everybody's hands up and like just paying attention to you seems so.
Well, it's that moment when you have that moment on stage that for some people that moment is the story might go the other way. And then I got asked to do this song and I had to do it. It was a nightmare. Yeah. And they go, and that's when I realized I never wanted to be up there. But for a lot, you know, for us, you have that moment on stage and you're like, I love this. And that really begins, I feel like, the constant path back and forth to the stage. How can I get back up there? What do I have to do it again? And that really begins like the journey of being on stage.
Yeah, I remember in fourth grade, I had a solo for a song called Channel Surfing, which was us dancing, choreographed dance with remote controls, and I had to sing all about television. And I was fucking terrified at the time, but I still wanted, I was like, well, that was fucking scary, but I wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's almost that, it's so good that it feels bad, but it's so good.
Yeah.
And then you're like, that one part was kind of cool, that other part wasn't, but I want to do that again.
It's just like, it's scary until you're up there. You're like, well, I can't stop now. I may as well be done with this. Then you're like, oh, they're applauding. Okay, it went well.
It went all well.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. It was probably terrible. But
I always say the pat on the back afterwards, like when someone's like, that was really good. You're like, really, it was? Like, it almost surprises you.
Yeah.
You know?
So I love it. That's cool. Go. That's a great fun
magician.
Fact. That's a magician.
Fun fact.
Yeah. Here's a fun fact about Harry Houdini before we get into our another fun fact that I had a segue about school since we were talking about being in grade school and all that. But real quick, Harry Houdini was born, his real name was Eric Weiss, or Eric Weitz. He was born in Budapest, Austria-Hungary in 1874, and he took the moniker Houdini after the French magician Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin, after reading his autobiography.
Largely considered the father of modern magic.
Yeah.
And he died on Halloween.
Halloween.
Spooky.
There you go.
Yeah.
And promised that he would come back and he, no matter what, he would return to his wife, which I guess on Halloween for years she did seances and he never.
Man.
I think maybe he wasn't really that into her.
Maybe he was talking to like a secret family.
Yeah.
He's also Harry Houdini is one of two magicians with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Do you guys have an idea who the other one is?
Ooh, let me think. Doug Henning.
No.
I'm not going to. I'm really hoping it's not David Copperfield.
It is David Copperfield. Yeah.
You know what? I almost went with that. David Copperfield.
Yeah, he's got a star. And soon, Chris Angel.
And, man, I'll tell you, Chris Angel, I guess they're more notable than, what's his name? Lance? What's that dude's name?
Lance. The guy that's, whenever you leave Burbank and you see the, he's right there.
He's got a thing in Vegas. Yeah. He's a very, like, 80s, you know.
Very 80s.
You know who else I'm surprised doesn't have? Thing is, the dude,
Lance Burton.
Yeah, he was always good. Like he was always on those shows when I was growing up. Another magician. I'm surprised the Siegfried and Roy don't have a star on the Walk of Fame. There,
you think that they would? You definitely think that they would.
This is horrifying. Have you guys heard the phrase "died on stage" before? Like they're dying up there.
Yeah.
That evidently, according to this article from illusionist.co.uk, which I'm assuming is some sort of magician website.
Okay.
The phrase "died on stage" was taken to an extreme by Colu of Lorraine in 1613, when he was clubbed to death by an angry audience member using one of his own props.
Oh, wow. So he was a prop guy. They took his prop, beat his ass with
it. So in 1613, Carrot Top would not have flown.
I think it's one of those kind of things, too, that when people give prop comics like a lot of shit, maybe that just ran even deeper then.
Oh, yeah.
Because imagine getting beat by your own prop on stage.
Yeah, right?
That's a bummer. You're like, I brought that big furry whatever, and now they're hitting me with it.
I spend my life savings on that.
I actually blew my knee out. You know when that phrase, like, go break a leg?
Yeah.
Like, whenever someone says that to me, like, I mean, which people don't, I think, our age say that to each other. It's usually like an older person, like, hey, have fun up there, break a leg. I actually blew my knee out, full reconstructive surgery, everything. Salt Lake City. First day of the Warped Tour, 1996.
Yikes.
Jump up the drum riser. The stage, I was singing for 22 Jacks.
Uh-huh.
The stage was like pushed together and there was like a seam in the middle and it was just off a little bit. And my knee already had a lot of problems either way. But when I jumped up, I landed and instead of going forward, everything went backwards. And I felt it all the way up to my hip. Like I heard, you know, when people say, I heard the snap, like I heard it. And immediately, because when you bust out your ACL, it just fills up, swells up so much. Tried to stand on it, fell down, and then I finished the whole show though.
Yeah,
I went for full on Bruce. No, standing, dude. Iron Maiden style, Bruce Dickinson. Like, put my foot on the monitor, finished the set, and then like that was our first day of the tour, and then we were done.
Gosh,
had to drive all the way back in the van with the other band members, and they were just so bummed at me. Just like, you're the guy that ruined it, that we can't go on the rest of the tour.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to blow out my ACL.
So there you go. Break your leg. I've done it.
That's interesting that you mentioned driving back, because I got a little fact here.
Okay.
I knew most of this fact, but this second sentence of this fact I got here, I didn't realize. So it has to do with highways. The two-digit interstates ending with zero go east and west. And with the five, they go north and south. So the evens go east and west, which I knew, and the odd numbers of highways and interstates go.
I did not know that
they go north and south. If it's three digits, like the 405 or the 495, it is an offspring of the original road, like the 95, or like you got the 270 for those in the Midwest and Atlanta. You got the 275, and you have the I-75. If the first digit of the three digits, it's odd. It goes through a city. If it is even, it goes around the city. So I didn't know this.
What's the 101 then?
So the 101, because it's odd, it goes around Los Angeles.
Got it.
And it goes around Hollywood and all that. Much like, as far as Los Angeles terminology, the 405, because it's even, It goes, wait, yeah, no. If it's odd, it goes through the city. So the 101 goes through downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah, okay. The 405.
And the 405 goes around it.
Around it.
Yeah, goes around it and sort of, it's sort of like that divided line between goes Los Angeles and Santa Monica.
Yeah.
The 2 goes through it in Glendale.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
we've solved your code, highways.
There you go.
We're on to you.
Breaking the code.
So many highways in LA. The 134 to the 2. And don't forget to cross over the 5.
And it's interesting because
the 110, the 70, right? Is that the 170? And the
170.
The Los Angeles area is the only place I've ever been where they preface highways with a definite article. Nowhere else in the country do you hear someone refer to, oh, yeah, take the 93.
You're right.
Oh, and back in Boston, if you say they're like, they'd look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
What's the one
like,
that goes on
take
the
93
coast?
To 95.
Is it the 95 or the 90? What's the one you take from, you know, this the main freeway that goes up and down the East Coast?
I want to say 93.
93, I think you're
well,
right.
It's like even in the East Coast, like I lived in Florida for a bit and I lived in Michigan and it's in through my hometown, it's I-75. And it's always like, you take I-70 or like I used to be in a band and or we'd go to concerts in Detroit and the Warped Tour and all that and you know Ann Arbor and all that. And it's always like you take I-75. It's never you take the 75.
We throw the
you
in
take
front of
I-75 or the 405. It's like no, you just take
they're like
take
institutions here.
Yeah,
they're like bands.
Yeah.
It's the 101, dude. The 405. They're playing.
Got 405 tattooed on my back.
And the 405 sucks during rush hour. Listen to the 101.
Well, speaking of bands and being on the road and spending a lot of time in cars, David Lee Roth obviously spent a lot of time on the road when he was with Van Halen. But after he left Van Halen in 1985 and before he reunited with them in 2006, he wound up working as an EMT, an emergency medical technician
in New York City.
Yeah. So he rode with ambulance crews during the dead of the night and he racked up over 200 individual rides and became pretty handy with a defibrillator. So.
How crazy is this? You're in New York, you're, say, in your 30s, whatever, and something happens bad, whether you get a cardiac arrest, you have an accident. All of a sudden, you know, the emergency vehicle shows up, and David Lee Roth jumps out. At that point, I don't know. I don't know if I'm stoked or I'm scared or I'm both.
I would think I was hallucinating.
I'd be hallucinating. Especially if, like, he's helping you, and then he, like, I just envision the scenario where he's in the back of the ambulance with you, taking you to the emergency room. The ambulance doors open out. He wheels you into the emergency room and just screams, "Somebody get me a doctor!"
Yeah, how did Saturday Night Live not do a skit on that?
Van Halen ambulance, man.
David Lee Roth. Look at partner.
Yeah,
looks like someone's hurt. Yeah. Like, just, you know, where does it hurt? It hurts here, too. Like, he would just go off on that. You know who did
Because that's all the great Van Halen songs really are, is just David Lee Roth in the recording booth just saying sentences and
He's just going through the EMT manual. Yeah.
Screaming. He's a smart dude, though. I read his biography, Crazy from the Heat, which I want to say Henry Rollins.
He interviewed him for that. Yeah. Like, he was saying he had like 200 hours of tape or something crazy.
I want to go to his house and just listen to that.
The thing that was crazy when I read Crazy from the Heat, it was when I blew my knee out, so I had to have this surgery, and I remember I was at my house, and I've never done any drugs, right? So I was really hesitant to take the Vicodin. And as soon as I had the surgery, I was like, I need the Vicodin. So I was taking the Vicodin, and my buddy gave me the Crazy from the Heat biography. And he's like, oh, dude, you're going to love this. It'll be something good for you to read while you recoup. I'm like, okay. So I'm taking Vicodin, reading the biography on David Lee Roth. And as you're reading it, of course, you're reading it in his voice. Like, I grew up, you know, in Pasadena, me and the Van Halen brothers would always practice. Eddie was a cute little guy at that point, but I knew that, you know, like he just talks in that voice.
Yeah.
But while I was reading it high on Vicodin, his voice was so in my head that when I'd put the book down and I was like, man, I need to get something to eat or maybe I'll go sit over here. His voice had, David Lee Roth's voice had replaced my subconscious voice. Oh, so I'd be like, maybe Joe, you need to go sit over here. Like I could not shake it. It was just constantly in my head because I was, you know, taking the Vicodin and reading his book. And it was one of those books that like, I wish I could say I've read other books as quickly as I read that. Yeah. Like 2 days, done.
It's a
smart guy too.
I
Super
have it.
Smart.
I have it. I got to get around to reading it, but I have it in my, literally, it's sitting on, I have, in my, you walk in my entrance, and I have like my front room, and then you go into my, it's kind of like the dining room, kitchen area, like I have a big air hockey table, and it's like a lounge area, and then I have my dining room and my kitchen. I have it literally sitting on my, air hockey table just waiting to be read. Like, I might just try and find an audiobook version of it and listen to it. But that's
the best.
Like, I'll tell you what, how funny was it? Like his voice is to me comparable with like Morgan Freeman's as far as narration. Like, I would love to like have like.
I wish David Lee Roth would narrate.
Where's the David Lee Roth like, ways?
I want a David Lee Roth
pack.
Voiceover or like Google Maps or even like I want to have him ADR Morgan Freeman's narration in every movie.
If he was the Maps voice in my Prius that I drive around, that little woman, I would. If you tell me right now, that's $100. I'd be like, all right, done.
Yeah, where do I
would go as
where
high
do
as,
I put it?
I would go as high as $200.
Wow,
to have his voice tell me what to do.
Yeah,
that's it's $200 for his voice.
$200 for his voice to be the take a ride. Like, but I want all the David Lee Roth isms.
I want him. Well, I want his
like,
voice.
That's it's interesting. That's not the most expensive part of David Lee Roth. One time at Lloyd's of London, the famous insurance company, they'd insure a lot of celebrities and their body parts. David Lee Roth once insured his sperm for $1 million.
Yeah, he did.
Not just his sperm, but basically it was to prevent him from accidentally knocking up groupies. So in the event that someone got pregnant, he would that would kick in basically to become child support.
That's genius.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. And you know, they went with the policy.
He was
only David Lee Roth would think of that.
Yeah. Also, another crazy thing Lloyd's of London insured was Tom Jones's chest hair for $7 million.
Was he afraid he was going to lose it?
I think so. Yeah, he thought that was part of his sex appeal. But
I love Tom Jones. It's not unusual. You know who does the lead?
By anyone.
A fact. You ready for this? Fact.
Good. I'm ready.
Who does the lead on Not Unusual? You know the... He's not unusual. You know who the lead does?
I don't know.
Jimmy Page.
Really?
Jimmy Page does the lead on that.
Well, I'll tell you. It's,
can you fact check that so that I don't get, like right now someone hits me on Twitter, you're a liar.
Well, we're talking about, you know, Van Halen and doing guitar solos. Eddie Van Halen did the solo for Michael
Jackson's
Beat It.
There you go. And I think he
did it for free, right?
Because it's what's called a sideman clause. Yeah. Like you just go, hey, you come in for the day, we'll pay you X amount of money. Probably paid X amount of money. Did the lead, didn't obviously participate in the hugeness of that record. But another fact, what pushed Van Halen from having a number one record? That record, because they both his record. And Michael Jackson's record came out at the same time. And if I'm correct, weren't a number one record because that record, Thriller, put it in number one. Van Halen came in at number two.
When did Thriller come out? 84?
I want to say.
That makes sense.
So there you go.
Thriller,
I can't believe
Michael
I
Jackson.
Know things. 80,
no, Thriller came out in 82, so it would have been the Van Halen 1, right? No, Van Halen 1 came out in 79, right?
Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
Van Halen. I mean, you very well could make sense.
We could figure it out.
See, Van Halen
can.
Discography. I'm going to
Tom Jones
here real quick.
It's amazing.
Am I right?
I'm looking it up.
Diver
right
Down.
Now.
Diver Down.
There
came
you
out.
Go.
Diver Down came out in 82.
There you go. I know things.
Yeah.
I wish I could replace the knowledge about Van Halen and Zeppelin and all my music knowledge. I wish I could replace it with parental books that I've read because I have two kids, 10 and 13, and I should know way more about the teenage years and how their minds are developing. And I should have read, like, there's a great book out right now called, what is it called? Wired. And it's all about the way the adolescents, how they're discovering now that adolescence is really from like 12 to 24, which totally explains why, you know, your brain is still developing supposedly until then. And I have that book. You know how you talk about the David Lee Roth Crazy from the Heat, like sitting right there on your table?
Yes.
I have that book sitting in my living room, and next to it, next to it is like some comedy book that I keep going to and reading, and I can't pick up the adolescence book that I should be reading as my daughter dives into being 13. Like I should know that. And I don't fill my mind with that. Instead I read about the set that Richard Pryor did and the words, you know, all cut apart. You know, it's just silly. But I'm more interested in that. Is that bad?
Yeah. No.
No, it's good to have a diversity of interests.
I remember
Those life experiences and those weird bits of knowledge will come in handy and will inform your style of parenting. You can't learn everything from a book.
The book for parenting is called, I think, Hardwired or something like that. And it's supposedly really good.
Yeah.
So for all you someday people that are going to make kids, you should read that.
It's interesting that you're talking about kids and teaching and all that. Because also, as far as rock and music goes, Here's a fun fact about Schoolhouse Rock. I don't know if you remember
Schoolhouse Rock.
For those of you that don't know about Schoolhouse Rock, it was a educational song form cartoons. You should know what Schoolhouse Rock
How
is.
How a bill becomes a law.
Yeah.
Sitting here in Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
I'm just a bill.
Conjunction, junction.
Junction, what's your function?
Electricity.
That was one big bear.
Electricity.
That was a scary bear. It was a hairy bear. Man, that was one big scary bear. That's such a great, yeah. There were little commercials that basically played. You would be watching Saturday morning cartoons, which would be all of your favorite shows, Scooby-Doo, all that. It's all cruising along. And then all of a sudden, the network decided to throw a commercial in that was a song.
Produced by General Mills. They convinced General Mills to fund it. And what they did is they convinced all of the Saturday morning cartoons, the blocks, the 30 and 60 minute various blocks of these short cartoons to cut them down by 3 minutes so they could add a General Mills commercial, which was a teaching kids song.
And it was about verbs. It was about adjectives, like you said,
science,
about bills,
everything.
Science.
Yeah.
Three was a magic number.
Great songs. That's my favorite one.
It is.
Three
well, that's the,
is a magic
the first
number.
One. That's the first
is that
one.
The first one?
Schoolhouse Rock was.
What about seven?
Seven.
Is that, is that the ice skating one?
I think it
oh,
was.
Oh, no. Figure eight.
Yes.
That was rad.
Schoolhouse Rock was produced because the creator noticed one of his sons who was having trouble in school remembering the multiplication tables. He knew all the lyrics
three
to the current rock.
Three times one is three.
Yeah.
Three times two is six.
He knew all the lyrics to the current rock song, so he's like, this is wrong. So Schoolhouse Rock began as a commercial advertising venture by David McCall. He was half of the Madison Avenue advertising agency, McCaffrey and McCall. The first song recorded was Three is a Magic Number, written by Bob Duro. It tested so well, they ended up making a full album, yeah.
I can tell you right now.
3, 6, 9.
Yeah.
12, 13.
3, 6, 9.
12, 15, and 18. 21, 24, 27, 30.
Yeah, so good. And I can tell you right now, everyone that's listening, you might be going, what are these guys? Just do yourself a favor. Google Schoolhouse Rock.
They're all on YouTube.
And they're awesome.
They're so
and
good.
I mean, I don't know if they'll be awesome to someone that's never heard them, but like for me, it just reminds me of bowl of cereal, pajamas,
absolutely.
Parents are crashed out, and I'm just watching cartoons.
Yeah, it definitely evokes that feeling of youth and just like you're learning, but you don't realize that you're learning.
Isn't it funny?
And that's the best way to do it. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, too, is one thing I remember, it was, I believe you guys did Wax did the Ren and Stimpy cover on the Saturday Morning Cartoons Punk compilation.
Do not check that out.
But there
that
was also
is a waste.
There was also a Schoolhouse Rocks compilation
and
that I remember.
Blind Melon was on that.
Blind Melon did three.
And I remember Shannon Hoon sings that. Nails it.
Dude, if you guys want to, as soon as you're done, listen to this. If you're at computer, YouTube, Three is a Magic Number by Blind Melon. And it's such a, not only does it teach you the three, what the magic of three.
Yeah. And if you don't know Blind Melon, Google Sad Bee Girl.
Yeah, it also had
another iconic video.
Better Than Ezra did Conjunction Junction. Ween did the Shot Heard Around the World.
I love
was
Ween.
Was a star of the revolution.
Yep.
Yeah, I like this fact. All of the songs written for Schoolhouse Rock, which was originally called Scholastic Rock, but it had to change it after Scholastic Inc. was like, hey, no, you can't do that. All the songs were vetted by an educational consultant from the Bank Street School of Education. So they went. It wasn't just advertising agency being like, hey, General Mills, we're going to do these things. They went. They made sure that they were
legit,
fit to print.
Yeah. Much like Sesame Street for the longest time, I'm sure they still do now. When Sesame Street started, they had like child psychologists and teachers and all that kind of vet and help along with that because they wanted to portray and teach kids the right everything. You know?
I wasn't a real Sesame Street kid.
No?
Remember Electric Company?
Electric Company? Mm-hmm. Or what about 3-2-1 Contact?
Don't remember that.
Don't remember that.
Now, if I'm right, with Electric Company, what I loved about it was you're watching the show. And then, and I might get this wrong, you might say, dude, that's Sesame Street. But if I remember correctly, as a kid, you're watching the show, and you know how shows have sponsors? Like, today's show is sponsored by General Mills. What I loved about Electric Company was they'd say, today's Electric Company is brought to you by the letter L.
Yeah.
And then they'd go into a whole thing about the letter, and then later on the show, today's show is brought to you by the number 3. And I always thought that was so cool, that just a random letter. Because as a kid, I wasn't that bright that I was like, damn, like a letter is bringing me this show. Like, I was so down for that.
Yeah.
Well, I know they did that on Sesame Street. I wonder if
was
they
it
did
Sesame?
That. I know they did that on Sesame Street. I wonder if they did it on both.
No, you know what? I think it's Sesame Street. Today's Sesame
Street.
Yeah, because
I know Sesame Street always did it. Sesame Street is brought to you by the letter X and the number one.
Yeah.
I love that.
So good.
There we go.
Sesame Street so much.
Okay.
Well, I guess while we're that's a great segue into since we Schoolhouse Rock started as advertising, Wax, your band Wax, as mm-hmm. we talked about, had a song and a commercial, an advertising commercial.
Who is next for
it
the
Nike commercial?
Yeah, that was big. You know what? That was the first time I remember. That was a game changer
Andre
for us.
Andre Agassi, yeah. And some other.
That's
dude.
A great. It's a great.
Pete
once
Sampras,
again,
I think, or something. Like
once again, once again, Spike Jones, yeah. Andre Agassi, and Pete Sampras. Sampras, am I saying
Sampras,
that right?
Sampras, I think.
Sampras, yeah.
They both set up in San Francisco, and they like are so into tennis. They're like, "Let's have a match right now!" And they set it up in the middle of downtown, like on yeah. Market Street, and they start playing. It has our music underneath, and I remember this is what's so crazy about that is that. 6 months before that commercial, and we lit a dude on fire and all that, the band was on the verge of breaking up. We had been dropped.
Okay.
We were basically, no one wanted to have anything to do with us. I had gotten our record that ultimately had those songs, Who's Next and in California on it, but no one wanted to put it out.
Yeah.
No one wanted to have anything to do with us. All the other bands that we had toured with, all the other bands that we were out on the road with, like our crew of bands, you know, whether it's Pennywise, Offspring, Rancid, Green Day, all of those bands were blowing up, you know, just charging. And we were literally on the road with them, you know, 6 to 7 months before. I remember we opened up. It was Green Day and Wax, Berkeley Square, for Billy Joe's 21st birthday.
Oh, wow.
Like,
wow.
You know, shit. I remember, I'm like, hey, dude, you're 21. And I was, yeah. I'm like maybe 2 years older.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, dude, I remember that. You're like, what's up? You know? And, I mean, you know what? I think I'm older. I think I'm like 5 years older. So like he turned 21. We're like, what's, and you're still in the same community.
Yeah.
Rancid, all those bands.
Oh,
so all of a sudden,
so
all of a sudden we get dropped. Which no one was putting a record out, and I thought it was a done deal, and it just goes to show you, like, life never turns out the way that you think it is. Like, mm-hmm. you think it's going down one way, and it's not. And I remember my dad said to me, I was so bummed, and I was holding together the band by duct tape because we had just had such a great run. We'd been on 120 minutes, we'd been on MTV, we'd done all these tours, and all of a sudden we were like, what do we do? And I remember I went with my dad. I was like, I'm moving to Chicago to do something. He's like, ride with me. So it was one of those father-son moments where I'm yeah. like, what? And he goes, you know what? Just drive out with me. You don't have anything going on. Yeah. You don't got anything. You know, like, I'll fly you back. Drive out with me. So we drove for like 3 days together, and we would just talk and we would hang out. And I remember all I was doing was just, you know, crying to him about, oh, you don't understand. The band's been dropped. And, da, 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 and, all, and we'd be listening to the radio. Offspring is on. Keep mm-hmm. them separated. You know, I'm like, listen, you know, in my head, I was like, we're a done deal. And I remember we get to Chicago and my dad says to me, all right, check it out. You have just complained and bitched and moaned about how it's not happening for you and blah, 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 blah. Everybody that we didn't turn on the radio once without a band or something that you toured with or you know or something like that. So he's like, dude, just get back to LA and, you know, you have an idea to put this record out and you'll put it out and everything, you know, that's meant to fall into place will. And just, you know, kind of like shut up and do it, you know? And I was like, all right, I'm going to do that. And I remember I came back and, you know, over the next 6 months, we ended up getting signed again, doing the whole thing. And I remember my dad calling me saying, hey, man, I was watching ESPN. I just heard that Who's Next. And it was such like a, even he was like, how the fuck did that happen?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, dude, I didn't expect you to actually put the record out. I didn't expect you to actually do, like, I knew that you would do it, but I never thought anyone would care. Yeah. Like, not that, you know, he was just like, like, I told you to follow through, but wow.
Yeah, it's
you
like, I believed in you, but I couldn't imagine this.
Never.
It's
there's
very
dudes playing tennis here. I just walked, because he's from San Francisco, so he was like, I just, you know, I witnessed them doing that, and now your music's behind it. How the hell did
that happen? That's amazing.
It's definitely an interesting thing, like how parents, they'll support you and stand behind you with everything, regardless. You wonder if they 100% believe you, like you're going to try it or whatever. Like, because like my parents, they support me in everything I've done. You know, when I was in my punk band, they supported us. We did all right, played some big shows. As you know, doing stand up comedy, they support me. They stand behind. They want me to do what I want to do and enjoy it. And it's always funny, like the other, like when they, like I've been doing, we've been doing this podcast for, you know, 70 some weeks now. And, out of nowhere, they're like, they started, you know, they started taking, catching in or downloading. My dad's like, holy cow, you're getting some big guests or whatever. Like he's starting to realize like I'm not just playing.
Well, all of a sudden, I think what happens is the parent, and I can, even as a father, like I've had little experiences like this, but what you're saying is basically there's things in life that even amaze your parents. Yeah. Like, wow.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, like what you're saying is your parents, your mom and dad, they look at the guests that you've had on the show, and it's not a bunch of like, oh, cool. So they're interviewing their friends and that's cool. It's like, wow, you had Henry Rollins on. I remember as a kid, you used to talk about Henry Rollins.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. You know, like it's you like, actually I, met Mr. Rollins. Now what's he like? You know,
a couple years ago, I had a big beard and I booked a commercial for Just for Men. It was a Just for Men commercial. And it was, you know, a national commercial. And like, they're like, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, I'm up in Ohio filming for this commercial or whatever. And whether or not they understand what it is, who knows? But like 2 months later, once it starts airing, they're texting me, holy cow, I just seen you.
Yeah.
You made it.
Screenshots of it. A commercial to them. And, you know, in Michigan is like the biggest thing, you know? And it's like, that's really fun.
When you stoke out your parents like that, I always say with our bands, like we have, like whenever we've gotten a band on Side One Dummy on like the Tonight Show when Jay was on there or Letterman or Conan, I remember like those moments for the band. It's a huge moment for them because they've grown up with those shows, and it was, you know, a lot of people. It's pre YouTube and all that, but it was still like a big deal. Like, whoa, we're in New York, we're going to be on Letterman. This is amazing. Like for Gaslight Anthem, that was a huge thing. Flogging Molly, same thing. But the best part is seeing the look on those people's parents that either come to the taping or you know you hear the parents talking to the or hear the kid talking to the parent like it's going to be on tonight, and that's one of those moments where you're like, whoa, that's cool, because you know you have your kid in a band, the last thing you think you're ever going to hear is David Letterman going, okay, from over in New Jersey, make some noise for Gaslight Anthem, or you know, or Irish Flogging Molly, here they come. And then those are those moments you're talking about, and I love that feeling. I just think that's
so fun.
It's cool.
Back to Nike here. Here's some fun facts about Nike. In Greek mythology, Nike was a goddess who personified victory, also known as the winged goddess of victory. Marty McFly, he had obviously his Nike Air Mags, but his other Nike shoes he wore were known as the Nike Bruins. And then back to advertising here, the Just Do It advertising campaign, believe it or not, was coined in 1988.
Kind of morbid.
Yeah. It was coined in 1988 at an advertising agency meeting. The founder of Whedon and Kennedy Agency, Dan Whedon, credits the inspiration for his Just Do It Nike slogan to Gary Gilmore's last words.
Now, if you don't know who Gary Gilmore is,
he
was an American criminal who gained international notoriety for demanding the execution of his death sentence for two murders he committed in Utah.
He's a serial killer.
After the Supreme Court upheld a series of new death penalty statutes in 1976 in the decision Gregg v. Georgia, he became the first person executed in the U.S. in 10 years. And his last words were, just do it.
Yeah.
Another quick
and on that positive note,
another kind of interesting bit about Nike, their logo. We know it as the swoosh. Yeah, it's iconic. You know, you see that, you instantly. It's like it's one of those international symbols where everyone immediately knows what it is. Now, the swoosh is a corporate trademark created in 1971. It was designed by a woman named Carolyn Davidson. She was a graphic design student at Portland State University, and she met a guy named Phil Knight. While she was teaching accounting classes, she started using freelance work for his company called Blue Ribbon Sports. Now, Blue Ribbon Sports was originally they used to import Onitsuka Tiger brand running shoes. Onitsuka Tigers, if you guys don't know, think about Kill Bill, those yellow and black shoes she wears in homage to Bruce Lee in Game of Death. The brand is Onitsuka Tiger. In 1971, though, they decided to launch their own brand. It was going to appear on a football boot called the Nike, manufactured in Mexico. And so this guy, Phil Knight, he went to Davidson for designs for the new brand, and she came up with like half a dozen ideas, and she finally presented them to Knight and a couple other executives at the company's home office. And Phil Knight, they wind up going with a swoosh. Phil Knight said, I don't love it, but I think it'll grow on me. And for the design, she was paid $35.
And then in September 1983, he gave her a golden swoosh ring with an embedded diamond and an envelope filled with 500 shares of Nike stock.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but $35 for that, like, multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah, but the 500 shares of stock.
Sure. Yeah, especially back in, like, 1983 shares of Nike stock today, like... Yeah.
Her kids are stoked.
Yeah.
Everyone's stoked. Everyone's like, I love the swoosh. Yeah, grandma, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I can do cocaine because of you. Like, everyone's just like,
That's interesting. You mentioned the Nike started as a blue leather company, right? The
Blue Ribbon Sports.
The Blue Ribbon Sports. This is a slight repeat of a fact we had previous episode. ColecoVision. Do you remember the ColecoVisions?
Absolutely.
The old video game system ColecoVision. It originally started, it was known as the Connecticut Leather Company, and they sold leather goods, that's where Coleco comes from, is Connecticut Leather Company.
Oh.
It's a combination of the first two letters of each.
Glad they didn't go with, like, Leather Vision.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole different ballgame right there.
So,
it's a different kind of Saturday afternoon.
But they're
for kids.
Yeah.
They originally processed shoe leather, and they ended up doing business with leather craft kits in the 1950s. But after that didn't pan out, they changed it. You know, they became a toy company known as Coleco, and they did the Coleco Visions. But here's something that I didn't know completely: they were the original mass producers of the Cabbage Patch Kids dolls.
Wow. I remember those Cabbage Patch Kids.
The Cabbage Patch Kids. Were manufactured by Coleco from 1982 to 1988.
How soon does Garbage Patch Kids come out after that?
Oh, the Garbage Pail Kids?
Is it Garbage Pail or Patch?
Yeah, Garbage Pail, I think.
Yeah. While you're looking up the Garbage Pail Kids, the Cabbage Patch Kids were a line of toy dolls created by Xavier Roberts in 1978, and they were originally called Little People, but they ended up getting mass-produced by Coleco. They were... they were created by Xavier Roberts, and they were known as Little People. Then he ended up selling them to Coleco.
They came out in 1985. They were designed by Topps consultant and Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Art Spiegelman.
And Topps is the same group that did all the baseball.
Yeah.
Yep, there you go. I love this show because I just walked out with so much more knowledge than I had when I came in here, and my brain was like a sponge. Like, I know a lot of different. I know everything about Nike.
Mm-hmm.
I know everything about video games, ColecoVision. I know about leather.
Yep.
I know.
David Lee Roth.
And I knew the stuff about David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
I felt I brought a little bit of knowledge.
No, of course. Absolutely.
I brought two things. I brought the Zeppelin info with Paige playing with Not Unusual Dude. And the chest hair, Tom Jones.
And his $7 million chest hair.
Gosh. Learning things.
It is. And learning things you'll never use again.
No, you might.
You never know. There might be a bar trivia night. Inventor of the steamship, Robert A. Fulton. That saved my ass one night at a bar trivia event. Yes.
Okay.
This is the type of stuff that gets you out of a ticket.
Here's something. The SS on ships, I may have repeated this before, but SS generally stands for steamship, which is like the SS Minnow or whatever. It's a steamship, generally.
Okay.
Because I remember there's some anecdote about in Europe it means something else or whatever, but yeah, that's what, like, anytime you see a ship and it's like the SS something something.
Do you find yourself when you guys go out and you're traveling, like, this would be something you'd be on a flight and someone would start talking, and that you have any of this information that really makes you stand out among the rest of the travelers around you?
I mean, believe it or not, generally, like, when we're recording, I have these facts, and then the next day people are like, what did you talk about? And it goes in one ear and out the other immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like RAM or whatever, where it's flash memory to where you remember it right away. But then, like, 3 months from now, I'll be talking or whatever.
It'll just come to you.
And it'll come back to me. Like, it's like, you know, it's something will trigger it, and I'll be in a conversation, like, in New York or somewhere, and it's like, oh, by the way, you know, speaking of this, did you know that? And it's just a random fact, but... It's, you know, you could be talking about video games or a nostalgia, you know, talking about ColecoVision. And now, like, I know, you know, or whatever.
Like, why do you know so much about the Connecticut Leather Company?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, boy, that guy knows a lot about School of Rock.
That guy loves Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can sing every School of Rock song. He knows them front and back. Yeah,
it was weird. You know, he did it.
Random facts that, you know, will just pop up in, you know, normal conversation.
Memory's crazy that way, because there are the things that you want to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then the things that you were told you needed to remember, and then the things that you just remember. It's like three different levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about how you learn it, how you study it, and how you learning it in such a way that you can encode it in your brain for faster recall.
As I get older, like, I'm so afraid that I'm going to be the guy that just drifts into, like, not remembering anything. So, you know that Lumisty mm-hmm. on the phone?
Oh, just, Lumosity?
It's so great I can't pronounce any words. Anyway, that I have that little thing on
my
phone. Yeah,
the brain training.
So I'm doing
app.
It all the time so that I can remember. So it's going to make my memory better. But I find myself sometimes, like, if I'm at a bar or I'm waiting to do a set or something. So, you know, you got a couple beers in you. So then I'm doing it a little buzzed.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's even better for my memory.
Well, if you learn it drunk.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Like, he's doing mind games while he's buzzed.
Yeah.
This was fun.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I hope your listeners enjoyed it. I had a blast. And
I just talked to them. They did.
Did they? Yes. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, the phones are buzzing.
Phones are blasting up.
So this is the part of the show. What do you have coming up? Where can people find you online? All that fun stuff. Anything you have to plug? We want to hear about it.
Nothing. No.
Google.com.
It's the 20-year anniversary of Sidewind Dummy.
No, what's going on? Okay.
Yeah, what do you got?
All right, this is what's going on. 20 years of Sidewind Dummy. So we're doing a lot of cool stuff for the label, and I still can't believe I've been doing that for 20 years. Like, who does anything for 20 years? Mm-hmm. So that's a trip. Super excited about that. And we have a lot of different releases for this year, and we're also doing a lot of, like, vinyl packages and reissuing a lot of stuff on vinyl and doing stuff like that. So I'm really excited about that. And I wish I could tell you that we're having this big show and we're doing this. And we had talked about that. And then my partner and I one day we were just talking in the back of Side One. And we were just, like, both just saying, I'm just honored and grateful that we're still in business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, because, like, being in the music business, like, a long time ago, it was sexy. Like, you tell someone, like, what do you do for a living? Like, I'm in the music business. Like, wow, that's cool. Now it's not that way. Not so much. Like, you say to someone, like, hey, they go, what do you do? And you say, I'm in the music business. They're like, oh, like, they feel sad. Like, do you need something? Like, you know, like, it's just, it's not as cool as it was. I have people say to me all the time, like, what? Like, do you even need a record company? You know, so it's different business now. So I'm grateful that we're still in business. As far as like comedy goes, I'm really excited. I'm going to be a part of Sketchfest in February.
Oh, congratulations.
And I'm really psyched because it's going to be a show called Bring the Rock.
Okay.
And it's going to be in San Francisco at Cobb's. It's on February 7th with your guy. I can never say his last name correctly.
Which one? Matt Myra?
No.
Hardwick?
It's Chris Hardwick.
Yes.
Chris Hardwick's on it. Jonah Ray's actually going to be up there.
Oh, sweet.
He'll be up there doing a show, but it's Chris Hardwick, and it's going to be Greg Barrett, myself, I think Garfunkel and Oates are on it.
Sweet.
And what you do is you tell a story about a song, and then you sing the song with
Greg awesome.
Barrett's Monarchs, Reigning Monarchs. So I'm really psyched to be a part of Sketchfest. This is, like, my third year.
Also, his band's playing the song?
Band plays the song. He hosts the show, and then he brings each one of us out, and, like, Chris will tell a story and then sing with the band.
That's
I'll tell a story,
cool.
sing with the band. So I'm super psyched about that. And then I got a headlining show here in LA on January 31st at the Improv.
Okay.
Very nice.
In Hollywood. If you want tickets, very, very simple. If you want to come and hang out, just email me josib22@gmail.com. And if you email me too, I'll send you a download link for free of I have all these stories, like, it's called True Stories and Bad Ideas, and I'll give you a link for free.
That's awesome.
And it's, like, a story of, like, the night I hung out with Joe Strummer, how I got my nickname, and I don't smoke weed, but I did once, and I have a story about it, how I freaked out, and I'll give you that. So hit me up, josib22@gmail.com, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, josib22, and thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you ever want to come to a storyteller show in Los Angeles, we do them at Side One once a month. It's the third Tuesday of every month, and you can get tickets the josib22 email as well.
Excellent.
Is that good? Right?
Yeah, that's
great.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I like it.
So, guys.
I like it, too.
Do it to it. And if you want to find us online, the show is on Twitter at TWL Podcast. We are also on Facebook. Today we learned with Razzle and Dan. You want to send us an email? Well, we have an address. Send us facts. Send us pictures. Send us pictures of facts. Today we learned podcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like something more personal, well, we're on Twitter ourselves. You can find me at OsteoFerocious.
You can find me at My Name is Razzle 2. And you can follow the podcast at TWL Podcast. You can send us a Gmail. Did you say all that? Yeah, I did.
And you can leave us a review on Yelp, complain about the Cobb salad. You can find something on Angie's List, find a good plumber.
Yeah.
And on Craigslist, say hi to Craig. Yeah.
And if you see me on Tinder, swipe right.
Yeah. Make with the swiping.
Make with the swiping. And as usual, you know, we want to thank everybody for tuning in week after week, and got a lot of people, a lot of emails and messages of people catching up and just tuning into the show, and we appreciate you and welcome, and thanks for giving us good ratings and reviews and telling all your friends about us, and continue to do so, and we hope everybody's having a great year.
If you guys ever need someone to help you with a trust fall, we'll catch you.
Yeah, we'll catch you. And as usual,
come on and slam, and welcome to the jam.
Thanks, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.